Hi everybody, it's Mark here. Thanks for tuning in or listening to the recording, wherever you are in the world. And the conversation that's going to be played with Roger Castillo was a pre-record. And before I press the play button, I just want to tell you there was one or two moments where we had a bad connection. So if you hear of anything like that, of course, don't be banging your computer or your iPod or whatever you're listening to on, because it is just a momentary breaks here and there in the conversation. But please stick with it, because I feel it really doesn't spoil it too much, just a few brief moments of losing connection. Anyway, I'll press play. Hi everybody, it's Mark Jones here again with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blog Talk Radio Show, and I'm very pleased this morning to be talking to Roger Castillo. I'm saying Castillo, I'm pronouncing it in the Spanish way, so it's either Roger Castillo or Roger Castillo. I'll ask you when I bring him on the air. And I came across Roger about maybe 6 months ago. I'd been listening to I was just talking to Roger before we came on the air. I was watching a Buddha at the Gas Pump interview with a lady called Lisa Cairns, and she was referring to her teacher quite a lot. And she mentioned the name Roger a few times. And coincidentally, the same evening, I received a YouTube clip from one of my friends, my good friend Michael Looney. And he said, "Oh, check this guy out. He's a really clear." And I started watching it, and I was immediately impacted by this guy. And then it was about 20 minutes into it, I suddenly clicked who he was, that he was the same guy that had been referred to when in the YouTube, the Buddha at the Gas Pump interview I'd been watching earlier. I thought, wow, that's a coincidence. So intuitively, as I quite often do out of the blue, I just friended him on Facebook, and I asked him if he wanted to come on. And here he is. He's now here. It's a few months down the line, but here we are speaking. And well, I'll just bring Roger directly on. How are you doing, Roger? Welcome.
Yes, hi, Mark. Doing well, thanks. Thanks for having
and
me.
And I really appreciate your, because, well, Roger's in Bali, and I'm here. This is a pre-record, so because of the time differences, I've got up earlier on the Sunday morning, which I wouldn't normally do, but I was really looking forward to speaking to Roger this morning. So, well, Roger, would you like to, I quite often ask my guests if they just give us a little of their background of telling us who they are, and I know sometimes that who may be a strange question from your perspective now, but would you just give us a little of your background and how you've come to this point in your life?
Yes, sure. I suppose I'll just stick to the part of the seeking, the spiritual seeking, and that process. That's probably more relevant. You know, it just happened one day back in probably 99, I think it was, where I came across a book that was talking about things that I'd spent my whole life thinking about, and I hadn't been a big reader. I didn't know that this stuff was in books, and well, there it was. And the book was called Stop Thinking and Start Living. And my thinking process was always sort of three quarters or two thirds. It never really came up with the final conclusions. And this book had sort of more rounded conclusions. And one book led to another, to another, to another. And very quickly, they went into this area that's known as Advaita or non-duality. It was an amazing process. It was magical. It was very quick in the process for me to realize I wasn't doing any of this. If it was up to me to orchestrate the changes that were happening, the thinking process, the insights, I would have messed it up on day two, maybe even day one. And after months of this process happening, and it would happen during the day as life was happening, and it would happen at night when my dreams were taking place. And when I say the process, it's basically an investigation of the nature of life. And that investigation was aided by the pointers that were listed in these books that were coming across my path, one after another, perfectly timed. And after 4 or 5 years of, you know, being immersed in this non-dual teaching with the effect on the system, on the body system, and the way that life was perceived being quite profound, where there was almost a 180-degree shift in the understanding of what the subject in each moment was, and what was actually perceiving the experience of life as it happened moment to moment. Then I came across a teacher in Mumbai. His name was Ramesh Balsekar, and he was a student of Nisargadatta. And Nisargadatta's most popular work and well-known work is a book called I Am That. And that book, I Am That, was instrumental in my process. And when I say my process, the top-down process, which is Advaita pointing at the nature of what we really are. And once I realized Ramesh, who was a 89-year-old man, was giving talks in Mumbai, that was it. And that he was a student of Nisargadatta, that was it. I wanted to go and listen. And that's the point where my journey changed from being the shifting from believing myself to be the body to being something that actually inhabits the body. That was the first part of the journey. And the second part was where Ramesh basically gave me a slap across the face and said, you know, come down from there and let's integrate this so that the peace and harmony can be brought into daily living. And, you know, my gratitude for Ramesh is, you know, I can't even put it into words. I wouldn't even try to. It's a relationship that I don't think I'll ever. I know I will never have one like it. It's the relationship in my life that will always be the one I hold most precious. And that, I suppose, is why I'm here. I am. You know, I talk from my own experience. It's who I am. And if someone wants to know about, has any questions about this subject, well, I'm very happy to share it for the same reason that I know what value came when my teacher Ramesh very patiently sat there and answered my questions and put up with my nonsense, because you know, from time to time there was a lot of nonsense. So, yeah, I don't know if that gives a answers your question.
That does, Roger, thanks. And I think it might be interesting for people to know before we dive deeper, because I heard you talk. I had a refresh and I watched the YouTube clip last night of you that initially impacted me. And you talked about your experience of going to see Ramesh, and you'd had these realizations or insights. And something that a lot of the people that I'm involved with talk a lot about, insights and realizations. And you was explaining to Ramesh about your insight, which I can relate to. I had quite a profound shift myself, which I often waffle on about and bore people on the Ice Cream for the Soul show. And it was a moment of listening to somebody talking about the nature of thought. And there was a moment of just suddenly realizing, and I'm using words to try and express something that the words don't seem to do it justice, really. I was in the kitchen listening to a man talk about thought, and then suddenly I heard what he was saying on some level, and I realized there was a realization that everything was perfect, and it was such a beautiful moment, but it seemed to go as quickly as it went. And then I seemed to be spending a lot of time re-listening to this certain audio I'd been listening to, trying to get back to that moment. And in some ways, that I was reminded of that when you was talking about the incident when you went to see Ramesh, and you was explaining something, trying to explain to something to him that you'd seen. Would you mind just going over that again for the sake of the listeners of that little story before we go on?
Yeah, sure. That was on my second visit to Mumbai, the visit to Mumbai was inspired by this experience that happened while I was taking a walk in a park, and in an instant, the nature of the moment changed. The subject-object relationship fell away. Everything was contained in what I was as awareness. I wasn't what the subject. I was not a physical entity. It was the awareness that recognized everything, that everything arose in. And the thought clearly arose that if someone were to come and start hacking the arms of this body off, it would have nothing to do with me. That was the experience. And so putting it into words once again doesn't do justice to the quality of it, but it was an experience that was so much in line with the non-dual descriptions of the nature of reality, that when it came to an end, and it might have been like that for 10 or 15 minutes, when it came to an end, the brain assumed, oh, this is it. This is the enlightenment that is often referred to in the seeking. This is what the holy grail of spiritual seeking is. And so I got on a plane and went to Ramesh and described this this experience in the best way I at the end, he said, Roger, that's just an experience. Don't worry about it. And so I said, oh, well, no, maybe I didn't describe it well enough. So I tried again, coming from a different angle. And he listened and he said, Roger, that's just an experience. Don't worry about it. And so I thought, no, he's not getting it. So I was getting a bit frustrated because I would have just, he would have gone on to the next person, I suppose. And so I tried again and he said, Roger, it's just an experience. Don't worry about it. And my brain couldn't comprehend that, because to me it was not just an experience. It was something so profound. Actually, it wasn't just an experience, but he needed to say that. It was something very profound, but it needed to be let go of. And that's what he meant by it's just an experience. It's not something that we need to try and recreate. And in fact, the trying to recreate it becomes a new form of suffering. And in fact, it's not actually something that ever needs to happen again. It's for peace of mind, continuous unbroken peace of mind, to be there in the course of daily living. Because continuous unbroken peace of mind, which is what the human being is really looking for, is not actually a byproduct of that state of oneness. It can exist without the state of oneness being there. But for spiritual seekers or people who have these experiences, the assumption is, because of the fact that there is a great amount of peace in that moment, the assumption is that peace is there because of the experience. And to some extent it is. It's there in that experience, but it can actually manifest, peace of mind can manifest when the experience is not an experience of profound oneness. And, that's what I enjoy talking about here, is when I come across people that really have found themselves going through a process of investigation and inquiry, and realization, but still it's a process. And the realizations and the insights can become blocks to what comes next. And so this is what Ramesh did. He cleared up the very subtle belief systems that were put in place by the teachings themselves. And they need it needs to be like that. The teachings are there. They sort of erase existing belief systems that get in the way of our true nature shining through. And then those new beliefs need to be erased also. And so, you know, that's great fun being able to be part of that. And when you see the gratitude that people have, well, then it's more than just fun.
Thanks for that. I just loved maybe I was being a bit selfish there, because it just reminded me of my own story. Like I say, I'm not saying I'm in the position that you are now, but I had that moment in the kitchen, and I've had another moment as well. And I was looking for that experience again. I think I was very much like you. Oh, this is what they're talking about in the spiritual texts and the religious books, and then there was suffering from my perspective that I was really trying to regain that experience that I'd had, and it was quite problematic for a while until it was somebody more or less said the same to me. It's like, oh, it's just an experience, let it go. So
well, I know what you're saying. I walked the same route on that path, the morning walk, many times, just to try and get that back. it was when the suffering became obvious that I was, you know, waiting for this to happen again, that the thought arose, oh, what if Ramesh is right? It took several weeks before I actually considered that he may be right. I just had written it off and said, no, you can't just let it go. And as soon as that thought arose, and I said, okay, so really assume for a while he's right. And there's this amazing freedom came. And once again, it was shown how this expectation and attachment, which is one of the forms of suffering, had come in the back door. Just trying to create something.
It's just jumped into my mind just to ask you and come directly out with a question of, because I think the name of the video clip I was watching last night, it had enlightenment in the title, and I think the actual main satsang or the talk he was talking about is, you were talking about enlightenment. And Sydney Banks, who a lot of people who are listening to this who are aware of, he had an enlightened experience, and that's where the three principles understanding came from, in which he talked a lot about thought, etc. I'm just wondering, what does the word, and I know this is quite a big question, but if you could simplify it as much as you can, what does enlightenment mean to you? What does that word mean to you? Because a lot of people are out there, especially when they've had a glimpse of something, they think, oh, like we've just been alluding to, they think, oh, this is it, this is what enlightenment is. What does it mean to you, enlightenment, Roger, that word?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So enlightenment's a word, and there are going to be different definitions. So that's what's my definition.
Yeah.
And I just take on the definition Ramesh used to use. And actually, you can go just to the Buddha. It's enlightenment. This is what the Buddha said. Enlightenment is the end of suffering. That's good enough for me. from my... Yeah, and it's simple. It's not the gaining of anything. I mean, now it starts sounding cliched again. It's not gaining of special powers, being in two places at once, your parking spot being available whenever you need it, full body orgasms, and you know, that's all pleasure in the flow of life. Actually, enlightenment is just a state that comes about, happening. Not in one's doing, no one's achieved it. Actually, that's one of the great realizations, is that there is no doing anything in life. It's a happening, it's a creation. a marvelous creation. It's a magical creation. And when the creation of life brings about what is called enlightenment, then suffering no longer is part of the landscape. And so what's then important is to define what suffering is, because people can have fancy ideas of what suffering is. I can go into that, but that's my simple answer. Enlightenment is the end of suffering.
I'll just say something to you that might be interesting or impactful to you here, and also helpful for the listeners, is that Sydney Banks, let's say the three principles of understanding originate from, which seems to be very in line with what you're saying, he quite often used to say, it's all thought, and then he'd say, it's not, or not necessarily in the same sentence, but he'd say, it's not what you think, it's that you think. And at first, I heard that said quite a lot before I had my moment in the kitchen, but it seemed to be, I'll try and use my words, I'll try and put it into words for me, it seems to be the identification that we have with thought that creates all our suffering, that if we, and the belief in thoughts. Does that make sense to you, Amat? Does that make any sense to you, Roger?
Yes, indeed. I think that all suffering is mental. When we're using the word suffering, we're not talking about someone, losing an arm or having a headache. That's pain. So suffering is actually our relationship, our attitude to what is happening in the flow of life. If we believe ourselves to be something in particular, and that's what tends to happen, is we have a belief of who we are, and that belief is inevitably erroneous. And from that false belief of who we are stem a whole lot of other thought systems, and it's those thought systems that are triggered by the flow of life, triggered by what happens in each moment. And the result of that triggering is, this explosion of thought and emotion that at its core we could say is an uncomfortableness with oneself. So suffering is all based on belief systems, and our true nature lies below the veil of beliefs. It's always there. It doesn't need to be added to or developed, but the problem is that it's covered up by these belief systems, and so there's this process that happens that challenges our notions of who we are and our notions of the nature of life, and if it's destined to happen, that process of challenging the beliefs will lead to a set of inquiries within the first hearing. And maybe the systems fall away.
Thanks for that. And you were pointing there to the, and again, this is why I love exploring and having these conversations with people, is you were talking about the true nature. You said the true nature is below the veil of beliefs. And Sydney Banks used to talk about, he said, we all have innate well-being. It's our essence is well-being, and I think that's after he wasn't particularly a seeker as such. He just had an out of the blue realization, and he thought, oh, this will help psychology, and of course he went to psychologists speaking about his realization, but quite often people just didn't understand what he was saying, and to many people that idea of the innate well-being and our true essence, it seems to be, I don't know where I'm going with this, it's just coming out now, it seems to be very difficult for people to accept or believe, especially, for example, if a person's in a shitty life situation. Like for me, for example, from my own experience, it was only when I got that momentary glimpse in the kitchen that I saw it. It was almost like the sun showing its myself from behind the clouds and then disappeared again, but I couldn't deny that I'd seen the sun. So would you say this is the actual core of what the non-dual teachings are, that they're just trying to get people to see that innate well-being and realize that's what they are?
That's exactly it. And it's only because of what we are, what our essence is, that this state of continuous unbroken peace of mind or well-being is available. Because if we weren't what we happen to be, pleasure and pain and the flow of life would be the determining factor of whether we feel complete or not. And in fact, that's the normal situation that we find ourselves in, is that pleasure or pain is what determines whether we feel good or we don't, meaning whether we have a good circumstance or if we have a good circumstance, it's easier to feel good. Although, this is where we know that it's not the truth. There are times when our circumstance is good, and yet inside there is still a feeling of suffering, a feeling of discontentment. And so, you know, it's this that starts to point to the fact that actually our state of well-being is not dependent on the pleasure or the pain in the moment. And the essence of what we are, we can only rest there once beliefs have been seen to be relative and to be possibly incorrect. That's when there's the possibility of stepping beyond belief systems. Then we just hold concepts. Concepts are not a problem. Concepts are great. Concepts, we can't live without conditioning. We're conditioned beings. But it's a certain type of conditioning that causes all the problems. Type of conditioning that basically says, I'm a separate, three-dimensional human being, and everyone else is a separate three-dimensional human being. The kicker is that not only am I separate, but I'm autonomous, I'm in control of what I do, and therefore everyone else is in control of what they do. And that belief system gets put in place from a very young age because of the experience that we have of life, and it becomes an unquestioned assumption, belief. Until such time as we start coming across chats like this or books that say what you are is not that. What you are is something that is invulnerable, something that's ever-present, unchanging, something that's not affected by the flow of life. And that the very nature means that the nature is peace, and therefore that's our birthright. Our birthright is to be at peace.
I was listening to you, I was watching you last night, and I'm just reminded of a few things you said. I wrote a few things down that you said that impacted me as I was watching them. And one of the things you said was, identify correctly with what stays. And I think you were just pointing to that in many ways in what you just said. There's something that's not changing.
Can you repeat again? Identify correctly with
what stays.
Oh, what
obviously,
stays.
I'm saying it. It was that. Obviously, that's just one statement out of an old thing you were saying. I think you was talking about. You was talking very much about awareness in that. Another thing you said. You said what we really are is awareness, constantly.
Yeah, yeah. So when we come across a statement that says, you know, what you are is awareness, what you are is unchanging, is ever-present, sometimes it's like, oh, okay, so what do I do with this? But when I came across those words,
I'm laughing now because can I just interrupt you? Yeah, because it's very interesting once you've had a glimpse of that. But this is, I think, before we came on the air, I'd been reading a lot of yoga books, And I was reading all these kind of statements, and it didn't. It was like, yeah, and it didn't mean anything to me. And I think this is the problem. Once a person's seen it, it's like, wow, yeah. But until you've seen it, it's like, what are you talking? Yeah. So what? I don't know why I just interjected with that. I'm sorry.
No. It makes sense. We need a frame of reference, and that's why. This is not something that you can necessarily just talk about for half an hour and then it's done. It's a wearing, it's a grinding away. I've spoken to people quite in 3 years, and then there's been a little break and nothing's really happened in the 3 years, and then something happens. And then at the same time, other people hear something once and it just pops. So we don't really know how it's going to unfold. But the point is that these teachings, these discussions are pointers. They're not the truth. And if someone engages in listens to this thinking, oh, well, how's this helping me? And taking it in the head only, then it's going to have a very limited shelf life and use. Really what all this is doing is inviting the individual to investigate for themselves, and hopefully there are pointers, hints that get mulled over as part of that self-inquiry. So we're not asking this to be just a theoretical discussion. It's like, take it into your daily practice, daily living, and investigate what is being suggested, so that it doesn't just remain someone's concept, but it becomes your own knowing based on your own thorough investigation. So going back to the point about what we are as awareness, is quite clearly, if I ask the average person on the street, who are you? I would expect, and it's the most honest answer, it's based on one's experience of oneself. It's, well, what do you mean, who am I? As well, so including, you know, sort of I'm this. What a silly question. And that's the experience that we have, is that I am this body, and this body has a consciousness that is able to recognize objects that are outside of it through the use of the senses. So the senses and the consciousness work together to recognize the external world. And I have thoughts that are my thoughts. They arise inside my body and my brain, and my consciousness recognizes those. So that's what we think ourselves to be. You know, if we're talking about thinking, the pointer here is thoughts happen. There's no one that thinks. There are thoughts, but no thinker. Now, this is this is something that some people will just not have a frame of reference for, and it'll just fall away. But sometimes it can be a suggestion that even without a frame of reference, we'll create an inquiry. And when awareness lands on the fact that thoughts actually just arise based on a circumstance we find ourselves in, something is seen, and that what is seen creates a reaction inside the brain, and that reaction is a thought arising. And if the object that was seen was a different object, or if the sound that was heard was a different sound, the circumstance different, the reaction would be different. And so our false sense of who we are is this belief that I am the creator of my thoughts, and therefore I'm the creator of my actions, and everyone else is the creator of their thoughts and the creator of their actions, and that's what the separation is. It's that belief system that has separated us and made us all separate, autonomous individuals. And so if someone hurts me with that idea of myself, then I have to hate them. You hurt me, I hate you. And if I do something that hurts someone else, then I have to feel guilty. I hurt you, and I hate myself for hurting you. And so there are two forms of different forms of blame, resentment, hatred, jealousy. But nonetheless, these are the general categories: pride for my good actions that have helped others, and the last one is expectation. And those five manifestations within us are all based on this idea that I'm a separate entity, the other is a separate entity, and I need pleasure in order to be fulfilled. And we're pointing here at the fact that that's not what we are. What we are is the awareness that recognizes everything that happens. What we are is the awareness that is ever present, and that awareness is not affected by what is happening in the flow of life. That awareness simply recognizes what's happening. And the amazing thing is that the sense of I, which we believe emanates from the body, is actually the obvious. It's the I that has the sense of existence, the sense that there is an I that belongs to the awareness. And for a while, with a certain set of beliefs in the system, awareness is forced to experience a separateness, and therefore suffering happens. Once this witnessing happens, once thoughts are witnessed as not my thoughts, but something that is arising in this moment, and body actions are not my body actions, but something that's arising in this moment, once that starts happening experientially, then the belief systems start to crumble, and it's a snowballing effect. As the belief systems crumble, the witnessing becomes stronger. And that's the first part of the process. The next part is the integrating back into being a human being. I just wanted to throw that in because it's very important. We don't go around living as awareness, but it's necessary for awareness to burst through and show itself. And that's what awakening is. That's awakening is where awareness becomes aware of itself. And before that, awareness wasn't aware of itself. Awareness was aware of itself as a three-dimensional body, and aware of itself as thoughts, and aware of itself as emotions and feelings.
Sometimes my guests say things, and I have the urge to say thank you. So, but thanks for that, Roger. And it brought a few things up, and I may not necessarily say them in the correct order, but one of the things that came to mind was. Well, my partner, as we were listening last night, she said, would you ask him about free will? And it just came to mind as you were talking. She said, is there free will, for example, from this perspective? Is there such thing as free will then, or is everything just... Quite often lately I've been hearing that everything's just happening, or nothing's happening. I bring myself into this. My ego jumps in and wants to say things sometimes. I spent time at a Muji retreat, a silent retreat, and I had another insight there that was very strong, and I don't often talk about it because to many people it just doesn't make any sense. And it was that nothing's happening. And there was a laughter that came when I had this realization. I thought, oh, nothing's happening. There's nothing actually happening. But it didn't make... When you try and put words on that, and when you say what do you mean, it's to the average person in the street, it's just nonsensical, you know. But it just comes back to that thing of free will. I think it all seems all to be interconnected to me from my limited perspective of just having a few brief moments of clarity, if you will. So could you talk? I know that was all a bit jumbled up, Roger, but perhaps first of all, could you talk about free will?
Yes, I will. You know, when witnessing is happening, it becomes quite clear that there is no one doing anything. It's all just happening. Part of the teaching, which, you know, can be very challenging, is that everything in life is predetermined. It's an experience of being created to be exactly the way it is. Now, that sounds very challenging to the identity that believes itself to be separate and in control. It doesn't want to hear that. Because it means it's annihilation. So if everything is predetermined, is there free will? And my answer is yes. And someone would say, well, hang on, they're opposites. This is the paradox. Yeah. This is the paradox of life. This is paradox of life is where we have to continually be able to bring together seemingly opposites and understand how they're actually complementaries. So from the perspective of witnessing, when witnessing happens, everything is arising inside what I am, because when witnessing is happening, the sense that everything, the consciousness that normally functions through the body sort of expands outside of the body, and the body is seen to just be an object within the consciousness that is doing the witnessing. And witnessing and consciousness and awareness, they're all interchangeable words. Consciousness doesn't, awareness doesn't think. It just witnesses, which means watches without judging. It can't judge because it doesn't have the capacity to think. And everything else is arising inside the consciousness that is witnessing, or the awareness that is witnessing. And so from that point of view, there's no one creation.
Sorry, Roger, can I just interrupt you? You just broke up a bit, and then we went into the weird Skype noise. Could you just say that again, the last sentence you said? If you can remember, I'm sorry,
I think when witnessing is happening, it becomes very apparent that the bodies and the thoughts that are happening are just objects arising, and that there is no entity that is creating. You know, the body is not an entity in and of itself. It is just an object. So what I'm talking about here is probably only of value to people who have had this witnessing happen, and actually witnessing is something that becomes quite a regular way of perceiving each moment. But it's not the ultimate resting place. But from that point of view, it becomes very clear that everything is just happening according to the way it was created to happen. But then if we come out of that and we see what is the mechanism by which life unfolds, so the creation has been created in order for life to unfold through the process of cause and effect and decision making. So when you're looking at a menu in a restaurant, a choice needs to be made. So there are 10 things on the menu, and one gets picked. Now, from one perspective, what gets picked is part of the dream of life or the creation of life. So what gets picked was always going to be picked. But the process by which it gets picked is the process of choice, which is options being available, and then based on the particular person's preferences in that moment, a choice is made. And so you can call that choice free will. But is it anyone's free will, or is it just free will happening, choice happening? And the thing is that we're so convinced with these words that everything's personal. So the idea of free will means my free will, and choice means my choice. But if we just look at it as choice happening, free will happening, And it's there, it's called free will rather than just choice, because in the moment it feels like I'm choosing.
Mm.
So the feeling is there is free will, but actually that free will was always predetermined. But we can't say there's no free will, because if you took away free will, then the experience that it's that I can do anything in this moment wouldn't be there, and then we'd feel like we're in prison or that we were a slave. And that definitely isn't freedom. So that's my explanation, is that free will and predetermination go together to create this amazing life.
Mm.
And predetermination should be a great relief to people if the identity has stopped reacting to the fact that thinks it's going to be annihilated because of the notion everything is predetermined. We can just relax and say, "Oh wow, so I don't need to worry. I don't need to make things happen." And that's what you know, happens when we sit back and everything then flows, and still and things happen, and they actually happen more efficiently than they happened before.
I'm so pleased you said that, because there's another question in front of me that came up last night when Sheila and I were talking, and the question is, so do you believe there is a flow of life then? And I think you've been talking about that in many ways already, but and there also came like a side comment on that. It was, do you believe there is a flow of life, and does it mean that if you feel good you're in it, and if you feel bad you're not in it? I'm just wondering if that might be a silly question or not. I'll just throw that at you.
Yeah. So I think that life in its entirety is a flow, in that whatever's happening, all the wars, all the poverty, all the amazing things that happen, so all of the good and bad, are life unfolding. So that's one, addressing one sort of explanation of flow. And people might ask, why are there wars? Why is there poverty? And my answer to that is that this creation that has been created by the source, and it's not a source that's separate from us, the source has become this creation. So there isn't an external source. That would be another form of separation. The source has become this manifestation, this experience of life. And this experience of life is a duality. It's been created to be experienced with a duality. The underlying nature is a non-dual nature, because there is only one source, one consciousness that has become everything. But in this particular instance, it seems like its creative essence has decided to create an apparent duality. And therefore, if there's health, there has to be disease. If there's wealth, there has to be poverty. If there's big, there's small. That it's just following the rules that it's decided to put in place for this creation. And then we can go to the question of, is there a flow that makes you feel good or bad? And I think the answer is yes, is that when we surrender to the ultimate flow of life, we find that there's much less resistance to what happens. And it's not just an intellectual thing. It comes with a grounding into our true nature as being something that is never born and never dies. Because from that point of view, whether things turn out well or not so well is simply on the level of pleasure and pain. It's not on the level of my existence. So there's when our true nature is something that's recognized more and more, a relaxation happens, because outcomes are not as significant as they used to be thought to be. And so the go with the flow means surrender. And when we surrender, there's a flow. When we're not surrendering, when we're trying to control things, which are ultimately out of our control, then there's going to be a resistance. And that resistance is, you know, when the restaurant doesn't have the food you ordered, when someone doesn't turn up on time when they said they were going to turn up, and that's the resistance. And so, yeah, when we go with the flow, there's a peace.
Mm. Mm. I'm just reminded, I have a friend, Paul, and I would say he has the same understanding as you, Roger, and quite often he was visiting here a few weeks ago, here in Spain, and I was having a coffee with him, and, well, just generally, he just occasionally look up with a big, amazing smile on his face, and he'd go, this is it, and he was referring to just moment by moment, this is it, and there's... Yeah. I questioned him quite a lot because he's obviously got a deep understanding of something that I've glimpsed and I keep personally. And I know all these words. If we had longer, you'd probably pick me up on them. But he's just pointing to the fact that this is it. This is, well, mm-hmm. I don't know if you can speak to that or not.
Yeah, I'd like to. So, you know, this discussion we're having, I'm quite impressed at how after my long answers, you still actually have the presence to ask another question. This is it's impressive. we're not really going into the nuts and bolts here, but we're sort of covering a bit of everything, which is nice.
Right.
And so what you've asked about here is present moment. We believe there will be a future. We take it for granted. What about if we start considering that the past is just a memory in this present moment? And if we believe that meant something more than just a thought, which is all that is a thought in this moment, then what happens is this imagined past comes into existence. And the same with the future. If we have expectations of what needs to happen in the future, which is the present moment, we've created time. And it's as good as real in our experience once we believe those sorts of things and expectations of things that we can.
Hello? Seem to have lost Roger for a second. I apologise for the. Sorry, Roger. I lost you.
That's the reason.
Roger,
can you hear me?
Yeah, you just broke up again. Occasionally, the line broke up there. So sorry, I missed your last sentence or two. I'm afraid. I know it's difficult to go back sometimes.
No worries. So I was just saying that if we believe and hold on to the past, which is arising simply as a thought, and if we hold on to the idea that we're in control and have expectations about the future, which is simply another thought in this moment, we bring time into existence. And that time tends to cover up what is the only truth that is really now, which is the present, the presence. And it gets covered up, just like our true nature gets covered up. Actually, our true nature and presence are pretty much one and the same thing. And our nature is so accommodating, it allows whatever's there to be center stage. And so these thoughts about past and future, they contaminate the present moment. And don't get the moment because we're thinking about regrets about the past and complaints, you know, about what someone else has done. And it's real, which is the stillness in this moment.
Thanks again for that, Roger. And I think what I'll do, they seem to be breaking up quite a lot now, so perhaps I'll bring the conversation to a close. I've really enjoyed speaking to you, and perhaps maybe we can do it again in the future. And I'll just check check my questions because I had a few things that I think you've more or less covered everything I wanted to ask you about. Now, would you like to? I'm sure people have found this conversation interesting, as I would hope they find all my conversations interesting. But You're in Bali at the moment, and I think you said you're coming to Europe. Are you going to be doing satsangs or events when you come to Europe, Roger?
Yes, that's the intention. I just want to be available. At the moment, I'm in the process of seeing where there's an interest. So if anyone is in Europe, and I'm putting aside September and October really for these chats, maybe, you know, 1 or 2 day events, then please contact me and express the interest, and we'll see if we can do something. And my best contact is Facebook, really. If people send me a friend request, Roger Castillo, or my email address is rcastillo@westnet.com.au.
Sorry, Castillo at what? Sorry, could you spell that out?
Yeah, at Westnet,
Oh, West.
Westnet, yeah, .com.au.
Great, thanks very much. And like I say, well, thanks again. It's been really a pleasure after being impacted by you off that YouTube clip a few months ago, and then finally get to speak to you. And again, I felt you would speak very clearly. I think that's one of the things that people liked about Sydney Banks. He seemed to be very concise in many ways. He perhaps didn't say things exactly as you did, but like I say, that it seems to be different ways. The finger that points at the moon is not the moon in many ways, is it? Isn't it?
Definitely not. Everything we talk about is just a concept. So, you know, if someone takes what we've spoken about on as a truth, then they're missing the most in the greatest invitation, which is to investigate this for yourself. And the experimental ground is daily life. So, in summary, what this is all about is trying to bring about understanding of who we are. And that understanding of who we are, that knowing, that being what we are, so it's not an intellectual knowing of what we are, but just being, resting in our beingness, delivers continuous, unbroken peace of mind, regardless of circumstance. And that's the gift that is open to us.
I think I'd just like to finish with that, what you just said. Unbroken, it brings us unbroken peace of mind, regardless of what is happening to us. And I think that's beautiful. And I think that's what more and more people. I don't know if it's just because I'm around a lot of these people these days, Roger, but there seem to be more and more people seeing that possibility, that there's a possibility of peace no matter what's going on. It's nothing to do with the outside circumstances. It's an inside out experience, really, isn't it? But we're tending to believe that the outside creates our reality.
That's exactly it, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. And it goes back to what we said, you said originally, the essence. It's the essence of what we are that allows this to be a reality. If we happen to be what we think we are, a separate physical entity, then, you know, we'd be caught in this roller coaster that we find ourselves in generally. So there is a way out, but our belief systems need to be significantly challenged.
Well, thank you. I won't keep you any longer. I could talk to you all day. What time is it there where you are now, Roger, in Bali?
3:10 in the afternoon.
Okay. Well, I'll
So it's
let you go.
been a good Sunday afternoon.
Oh, lovely. I'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and thanks very much. I'll just end the recording. Would you just stay on the air briefly after I say goodbye to you and everybody?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Well, thanks again, everybody. I've been talking to Roger Castillo, who's based in Bali. You're Australian, aren't you, Roger?
That's right.
Yeah,
Western
he's an
Australia.
Australian man. And I just want to say thanks again to him. And I want to say thanks to you all for tuning in or listening to the recording. And as always, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can get in touch with me at icecreamforthesoul.com. That's 4 as always. And As always, I'll mention that there are a few events coming up here in Spain where I'm going to be going trekking. And I mentioned a guy named Paul, he's going to be coming trekking with me. And he's got a very similar understanding as Roger. And maybe I'll get Roger out here one day, trekking in the Spanish countryside. So, well, anyway, I'll say goodbye to everybody and thanks again. Thanks again, Roger. Bye.
Yep. Thanks, Mark.